This KFK podcast is presented by Bank of Colorado. Honesty, integrity, hard work. It's the way you live and the way we bank. Bank of Colorado has been a family-owned, community-focused bank for generations and will be here for generations to come. Bank of Colorado. There's only one. Member FDIC.
Horrifying news story.
I don't know if this is the kind of hard-hitting news you're used to.
Got some good news and I got some bad news.
Now this could be the big story of the summer. Network is going to be wanting plenty of coverage.
What do you mean, silly? I mean, that's real news.
I can't wait to get into, it's not a top story or anything, but I want to get Coach's thoughts on the Jaquan McMillan's interception. Go Pokes, you are 100% wrong on this one. Said my take is the worst take ever. The ball was coming out of his hands. It didn't survive the ground. It just so happened McMillan's hands were between the ground and the ball. Interception. I'm sorry. Those rooting for Josh Allen, you know, really, really fighting over this one. But I want to get Coach's thoughts, because if he thinks it was a catch interception, okay, I'll listen. But it's still going to be hard to change my mind. The Titans are hiring 49ers defensive coordinator Robert Saleh as the next new coach. He went back to San Francisco to be the defensive coordinator. Obviously, when he was with the Jets, his defenses were still good. His defenses weren't necessarily the problem. It's just finding a quarterback, and maybe he has that. They're going to give him a 5-year deal, and now he has Cam Ward. So we'll see kind of how that one goes. Coach, you have a lot of interesting connections with great college coaches, former great college coaches, or just college coaches, and NFL guys, too. Did you ever cross paths with Robert Saleh or anybody kind of in his network?
Oh, Saleh, the only interaction that I've had with him, I never worked with him, but the only interaction, they had targeted Josh Wilson as their draft pick, and he was part of that. And so he came to our facility at BYU, spent some time, watching Josh. And, of course, all the teams were there at BYU's Pro Day, which is always the case. But once you get to that kind of first, second, third pick, there's only two or three teams you're talking to about it. And so, yeah, it was, you know, he's a very intense guy and was intelligent, came across as a good guy, also down to earth at the same time.
Of course, yeah, that's a no-brainer. Obviously, he was in connection there because that makes sense with the BYU connection there, too. All right, the Big Ten and the SEC, I just think the headline is crazy to me. With the Friday deadline looming, the Big Ten and SEC remain deadlocked about the future format of the college football playoff following Sunday's annual business meeting of college football playoff leaders. Just to quickly summarize it, basically, the SEC wants to have 16 teams. The Big Ten wants to have 24 team in the playoff format. I just think the headline is fascinating. Imagine if this was the NFL, Coach. It was the AFC West and the NFC North are deadlocked and can't figure out what they want the playoff structure to look like. That's never how it is. And I get it. College football, sports, it's a different beast. But we are awaiting on two conferences to make the decision for the rest of an entire organization. And it's fascinating to me.
Yeah, it's absurd. And hopefully that the public gets their voice out there too, right? Because it's money that drives it. The SEC thinks that there's going to be more money for the SEC with 16 teams. The Big Ten thinks there's going to be more money for the Big Ten with 24 teams. The FCS has for a long time been talked about as the model for the FBS going to playoff to the playoff model. And we do have 24 teams at the FCS level. The huge difference is FCS conferences are geographic in nature. They're geographic consortiums where none of the FCS programs have really put a conference together for the purposes of television revenue. And so we haven't built our conferences necessarily to be strong. It's a geographic cooperation that makes sense for the programs within those the FCS conferences. That's not the case. Now that the FBS programs have chased the television money and they're putting together conferences from all over the country, teams that represent almost coast to coast in some cases, now you see the money grab is kind of a more difficult proposition, and the idea of fairness. And this is where I hope that fans and the public, their voice is heard. In the FCS, if you're a conference champion, you go to the playoffs. Doesn't matter whether you're a good league, quote-unquote good league, bad league. And the idea is always, hey, if you can't win your league, don't gripe about not going to the playoffs. Yeah. If you can't win your league, you can't win the national championship. You know, obviously that's not the case, but I think a case could be made that you don't have an opportunity necessarily if you don't win your league.
Yeah, and
there's nothing wrong with that, in my opinion.
That's what I love. It's the same as in the NFL. Where you win your division. What's the point of leagues and divisions if it means nothing to compete against each other and try to win it? So that model to me is the best model. I've said for years I feel like the FBS, and I know there's going to be blowouts. Whatever, there's blowouts when Alabama's playing Ole Miss or whatever. We see it all over the scorecard. I would love just to have conference champs in. And, you know, I think eventually we would get a better caliber of team, players, whatever, going to these schools because it's like, hey, do you want to go be a third string defensive tackle for Alabama? Or do you want to go be the guy from day one for two seasons at so-and-so school and go win your conference and you're on the national spotlight winning playoff games?
Yeah, it would mean more parity. And right now with primarily two conferences running the show, so to speak, the last thing that we're going to see is parity. And that makes it really difficult. There's complete parity in the NFL, right? The last place teams get the first picks. There's a salary cap, and there's a very equitable playoff structure where a lot of teams have the opportunity to get in there. That's kind of a broken piece of college football right now, at least at the major college level.
Yeah, and we can get into some more of that a little bit later, but I do have to ask you. I sent you the clip just in case you didn't see it on Saturday. We're still arguing about this, but the Brandon Cooks catch that wasn't a catch, the Jaquan McMillan interception, was it a catch or was it an interception, Coach?
It definitely was not a catch.
Right.
Right. I think a case could be made that it wasn't an interception because there, maybe the ground was involved in the interception, but it definitely was not a catch. The definition of a catch is to finish the play, complete the play, and control the ball through the ground. And he didn't do that. He barely even touched the ground before he lost the ball. So definitely not a catch in my opinion. And it would be interesting, like, if you're a Colorado State fan and a Bills fan, right? Yeah. How do you justify that? Because yeah. Colorado State won a game on a far more controversial non-catch than that, right? Like, our guy went up, caught it, controlled the ball, rolled over, had the ball himself,
yep.
And all of a sudden, that's not a catch.
That was a catch.
Yeah, exactly. So if we're gonna adhere to a strict test of what controlling the ball is through the ground, you know, the one in the Broncos game wasn't even close.
Yeah. The Broncos game aside, that how long will that play? That play will stick with you forever, won't it? I mean, I know you don't focus on the past, but that's a part of the history of the UNC Bears now, with that opportunity to almost knock off Colorado State, which in some people's minds that listen to this show, they just count it as a win. just count it as a win, Coach.
I hear that all the time.
But where does that stick? Does that? I mean, it's hard to get that out of your brain, isn't it?
Yes, I do. I do wonder if over time it will be more of a motivation for our program. And so I'm not, you know, if we had won that game, it wasn't going to change much of our season. And I think we're not playing for that. You know, we're playing for a championship, and that would have been a tremendous accomplishment and something that people would remember for a long time. But I think they're remembering it anyway because it was such a horrible on-field decision to take that away. And because it was essentially the last play of the game, it's very easy to make the connection and say, well, you know, that's a win.
Yeah. Oh, it was such, and I was at that game. You know, I didn't go to many games this year. You know my situation. We know with my kiddo kind of needed me home a little bit more, but that was kind of still in a spot where I could get out and go to games, and it was wild there because you know, I'm on one side of me in the I'm in the press box, and one side I've got a bunch of UNC supporters in a little box to the left of me. And we're told we can't cheer. And I cover both teams. I went to UNC. So I'm just going to say that. But I can't cheer or get excited. And I actually had one of the guys paying big money for one of the suites up there catch me in the hallway. And he grabs me and goes, "Brady, what the hell? Why aren't you excited, man? Are you really that deep into CSU that you can't even cheer for UNC?" And I said, "I cover both teams. I went to UNC. They'll kick my butt out of here if I show excitement toward that." So I'm like very reserved watching this, but just seeing the emotions on so many people's faces, it was wild.
Yeah, it was an emotional moment for those who are fans. You took the professional route, as you should.
I try. I'm a professional.
You cover both teams.
Yeah, sure.
So that's perfectly understandable. We've talked about when that catch was made, I was going up and down our sideline saying, "Hey, be classy in the postgame handshake," because I knew it would be such a devastating moment for Colorado State. I have friends that coach on that staff. I, you know a lot of the players there and have respect for the way that they play, and it would have been a devastating result for them. That was my first concern, was how do we come out of here with and still be a classy program with a big win like this.
I have an interesting, strange, maybe not even interesting, but strange question. Did you have any kind of relationship with Jay Norvell before that game? Maybe, I don't know if paths ever crossed outside of that. And what was that like after the game, if you can answer kind of a two-parter there?
Sure, yeah. A little bit more of an acquaintance. We've worked with some of the same people. I believe that his agent at one time and my agent are the same agent. And so there was a time at where he was looking to make a transition. We had an offensive coordinator opening at BYU, and we did look at Jay as a candidate for that job. I can't remember whether he got the Colorado State job at that time or some other offensive coordinator job, but he's been a well-respected guy in the business for a long time at some major programs that have won a lot of games. And then we have a few functions every year. There's a Colorado Coaches for Charity that we visit at. Jay's a professional, always very cordial, stands for the right things, raises a lot of money for, I believe it's cystic fibrosis, and his wife suffers from that. And so it's a cause that's personal to him. So, yeah, we have an off-field relationship, and I would want him to be as successful as possible, except for the day where we match up once a year or whatever. And so, yeah, after the game, it's really, amongst coaches, it's generally either something very quick, like, you know, GG, good game, good luck next week.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah, or something personal, maybe, like, you know, who do you have next week? Or how's your, you know, if a player went down, how's so-and-so? Is he going to be okay? And in that case, Jay said, "Hey, you guys probably deserve to win today, and it's a heck of a job by you. You guys are doing a great job with the program here, and it's fun to see." And so it was a really classy way for him to respond.
Is that outside the norm for a coach to almost acknowledge that, "Hey, we got away with one there"? Is that outside the norm? Would most coaches in that case just be like, "Man, good call"?
Not for a guy like Jay. Hmm. I mean, Jay is the type of guy, as am I and most coaches that I know, we're going to seek out the other coach before the game. We're going to try to like bring in the human element and then compete like crazy for 60 minutes. But I know a lot of coaches that they don't have a true confidence, and that's what drives them, right? Like, it's not a true confidence. It's like everything all the time on the edge. They consider competition and being a jerk like necessary partners.
Really?
And I've just never seen the game that way. And I've had mentors that have been so successful. You know, Jim Harbaugh is as intense as it can be. The first thing he's going to do every time he gets to a facility is go find the other coach and talk about all things football and non-football. And you know, I think that's as an intense competitive guy as I've ever been around.
Have you ever had a weird handshake at the end of a game where a guy's a little, maybe it might lead to something else?
Yeah. I'm trying to maybe just boil it down to one story, but no, for the most part, everything has been good with me. I did have a coach once that just couldn't get away from me quick enough because he was chasing down the officials and swearing at them. Last year, I was invited to attend the Big Sky Officials Summer Clinic, and I told this story because I was a really young coach at the time, and this other coach was a longtime head coach. He was an older guy that had been really successful, and I thought, is that what I'm supposed to do? Because he was chasing the officials off the field, and he literally said, hey, get your ASS, I don't know if I'm allowed to say, get your ASS over here. It was like, maybe spelling it out is just as bad as saying it.
That one's all good. There's ways to say it. But yeah, it's perfect.
And I remember thinking, you know, I think it was a first or second year head coach, wow, am I not intense enough in the post game? Should I be chasing around officials and yelling at players and other coaches and all that stuff? But fortunately, I've had enough mentors, and obviously Lavelle Edwards is known as one of the classiest coaches to ever come through the game at any level.
What are your thoughts on Kurt Cignetti and his approach to everything? This the stoic, like there's no emotion on his face, good, bad. He's just staring. Sometimes the camera will actually catch him, that's my favorite, when he actually catches the camera and then he just stares at the camera.
Yeah.
Like, what in the hell is that? What is coming toward me? I think it's comical, and I'm not disrespecting him that way, but he becomes a character of sports, and those are sometimes the more entertaining guys.
Yeah, you sometimes see that with guys that like become head coaches a lot later, you know, and big-time head coaches later in their career. He was a kind of a career assistant for a long time, right? And so maybe he doesn't meet the traditional mold. You know, there are a lot of head coaches that kind of like seem to skyrocket through the business because they're good looking guys. Right. And like they doesn't have anything to do with whether they're good coaches or not, but they people want those coach. Cliff Kingsbury, I thought, was always one like that, where people would actually acknowledge that they were hiring him because he's a good looking guy. So, okay, well, whatever.
Very odd.
I don't know where I fit. it's hard to know.
You got to develop a different. If you don't have the looks, you have to develop some kind of a look.
Yeah, and so I think in Kurt Cignetti's case, like I can relate. He's just coaching the game. Like he's not wearing the outfit, you know. She's not trying to present a certain type. In my opinion, he's just coaching the game.
I wonder how difficult that is, though. Once that becomes, now it's not that he created this thing, but it is what it is. It became something huge, and it was his looks, not good looks, but just his looks that were very interesting to people. I wonder how difficult that is to not be aware of that. But you're so dialed in. Once the game starts, I suppose, like, you don't have room in your brain for the extra stuff or how you're being perceived.
I can't imagine any coach kind of being cognizant in the moment of how they're looking or what their facial expressions are or anything like that. There's too much going on.
So we're not going to expect like a new look from you coming up next season. There's not going to be like blue steel or anything like that.
No, don't I already do that?
Yeah, you already have blue. Okay. Zoolander reference. Michael got that. You're a big Zoolander guy, right? Ben Stiller, you saw that movie.
Yes, I'm aware of the reference. I don't know if I'm a big Zoolander guy.
Like after a big call, you just turn left and you look at the camera, the ESPN Plus camera that's coming your way.
Right.
Throw that out at some point. You never know, coach. It's not too late to try a new look.
Yeah, I can't imagine that.
I would if I were a coach, man, I would be like spinning and doing cartwheels and just, or probably not. I talk a big game. Yeah. I would actually be very quiet and not say a lot. In fact, I'm questioning the athletic director who hired me still throughout the game.
I do know that, you know, it does cross my mind, and I think a lot of coaches' mind, that we're mentors, we're models for the moment, and so how should we be acting and reacting to unfortunate calls by the officials, unfortunate situations, mistakes by our players. And so I think that's why you see a lot of coaches kind of are more reserved, is they're just trying to present a model of stoicism, because if we let all of our emotions come out, it could be really detrimental to the team psyche.
Well, actually, there were some comments from Kurt Cignetti a couple weeks ago asking, like, why you don't show emotion when there's a good play, you don't show extreme frustration when there's a bad play. And you actually brought this up on one of our podcasts a while ago. It's like, if I react in a way after you believe, you know, Carver Cheeks makes that catch, and it's like, yeah, we did it. Well, then how do I expect the team not to lose their minds? The game's not over yet. There's still other things that has to happen, and I also want them to be professional at the end. So his comments a couple of weeks ago had me thinking of your approach, too. It's like, hey, the guys see me. So if I'm hanging on every emotion of the game, then how am I supposed to turn around and tell them not to do the same?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just like the players practice, we model that in practice. If I'm reacting or overreacting to every mistake in practice, that's not going to lead to a productive practice session. I want guys to be able to go out, make mistakes, put that mistake on film, and then study it later in the comfort of a air-conditioned, climate-controlled room and be able to really fully take in the full mistake and then make corrections before the next day of practice. So I think we're actually practicing our game day demeanor at all times.
UNC head coach Ed Lamb joining us. A couple of comments here. I also have a question for you. Texter here says, lives were almost lost in the stands of that game, including mine, the way we jumped up at that catch, talking about that specifically. Eastside Chris says, Coach, as a Rams alumni, you guys won that game. So,
That's cool.
As we got a lot of that, especially after the fact. I got this one, too, for you, Coach, and we talked about this a little bit off the air. Thoughts on CSU and Jim Mora now saying they want to visit every high school in Colorado, now focusing on recruiting Colorado kids where they haven't previously under the old regimes. Obviously, that's a big thing for the UNC Bears is to build through the state of Colorado. And then we see it all online. CSU has been at all these random schools. Jim Mora's staff has been out and about in the state of Colorado. So I guess kind of just wanted to get your thoughts there.
Yeah, I'm not really familiar with how that information came out. My first reaction would be if it was kind of organic from a conversation or a press conference or something like that, then I think that's great for the kids of Colorado, for the prospects of Colorado, for high school football. If Colorado State's kind of like putting that out there as a marketing tool, either in social media or otherwise, then, at the risk of offending somebody unnecessarily, marketing that's not a part of marketing is to declare your intention to go recruit and meet high school coaches. Really, the final test is whether you're signing those players, and to do that in the state of Colorado is going to take a developmental mindset. And I don't think that's really where Colorado State football is right now. I mean, I don't know.
I would tend to agree. The expectations are: we want you not only in a bowl game, but we want you competing pretty quickly at the top of the Pac-12 ranks. So building up a roster, we're already seeing the transfer portal kind of go crazy for CSU. You and I talked about this too. Like, if you're going to market, which that's where we're hearing this, is social media is blown up, and I'm not necessarily knocking it, but there's a caution there. If you're going to market that you're going to all these schools and you keep doing that year in and year out and you don't sign guys, or more often than not, you're not signing guys, the coaches and the programs and the organizations within these high schools, they start to become jaded. They start to become frustrated.
Well, we've got a lot of Colorado players on our team, as you know, recruited guys by us that weren't recruited anywhere else. I think you're starting to see that those players are plenty capable of playing at Colorado State. And so I think the final test for Colorado State or any other school that's declaring that they're, kind of scouring the state is, do they sign those players?
Right.
And we'll know that in a few weeks. I think part of the reason they're trying to probably get out with this marketing is Colorado State only signed like three high school football players during the time that I've been at UNC. And Colorado has only signed one high school football player. I'm from the state. I should clarify that. From the state of Colorado. So, and meanwhile, we're up in just in my 3 years here, we're more than 50 in terms of Colorado high school players that we've signed. So it's not apples to apples. Coach Mora, Coach Prime, those guys need to do their thing for their program, and I'm not sitting in their staff rooms. I don't know what their philosophy is, but I can tell you, I hope that they continue to visit all the high schools, but then find those players not good enough for them.
Yeah, and it is interesting. It's something to monitor for sure. Like you said, we'll find out probably in a couple of weeks if a handful of Colorado guys find their home just north of us into Fort Collins. Let me ask you this, Coach: is CSU in any hurry to want to put UNC? And maybe this is a future schedule thing. I don't know, but to put UNC on the schedule, because we're not even just talking about the win that was a loss, that was a win, that was a loss. The game before that, the year before that, that was a 10-point game in the third quarter. That was a very competitive football game as well. What's the future of that scheduling look like?
Yeah, so two sides to this story. The first is the perceived difference between the Mountain West Conference and the Big Sky, it's only a perception. Mm-hmm. And you can look at the games, the crossover games all through our conference.
Yep.
The level of football is not the disparity is not near as much as the disparity between facilities and budget and coaching salaries, if you will. There's a lot of disparities, but the players on the field, there's not a lot of disparity there. And so that is true. The other thing that I believe is true is I don't think Colorado State's administrators or coaches fear UNC or any other Big Sky school in any way. They're, you know, these are competitive people. They believe in their ability to win these games and schedule them. And I think they really, you know, as far as playing an FCS team, I think whether it's Colorado, Colorado State, Wyoming, they would like to play a local-ish regional FCS team as much as possible as well. So I think it's a great fit, and I want to continue to have that relationship to be able to play those games.
You do have a Mount West game in the future next year, mm-hmm. and this is Go Pokes. I hope you're listening.
At
I hope
Wyoming.
He's ready for this. He's our diehard Wyoming fan. Yeah, you guys go to Wyoming to War Memorial Stadium on September 12th. That's going to be it wasn't that long ago UNC played Wyoming up there as well, and that was a battle. So I think that's a fun. I love these games. I love when it's localish, regional, whatever. I think it's such a great thing for the state, and I know in the areas surrounding the state.
Yeah, it absolutely is, and we have the flip side of the dynamic I'm talking about too, right? Like we play RMAC teams. And Chadron State, we played Chadron State last year. They gave us all we could handle.
Yeah.
And Chadron was coming off a pretty poor season the year before. And so, you know, our players, maybe our fans think we're supposed to blow them out. Well, Chadron ended up being a really good Division II football team, went to the playoffs. The top of Division II is very comparable to FCS, and the top of FCS is very comparable to FBS. So we know the dynamic from the other side as well, where we have all the pressure to win this game, and we're the ones paying them to come to our stadium. We would not go play a game at Chadron State. Wyoming or Colorado State would not come play a game at Nottingham. It's the dynamic is they're paying you to bring you in as a team that they should beat.
Well, I'm already looking forward to it. We're not that far away from spring football, Coach. Do we have the dates for that yet? Is that, it's right around the corner.
April. Yeah, we take the month of April, essentially, to do all of our spring practice. We've got to push it back as late as possible. Spring can be some of the most, some of the worst weather. And you can have spring football more realistically in the winter here than you can in the spring sometimes, especially if you're trying to do it during March.
I have a feeling we're going to have a terrible spring, actually, because we were so spoiled. Some would say spoiled. I like snow. But in December and January, we just didn't get much of it. So I think we're going to see it when you guys are on the field.
Could be.
For spring ball. 30 minutes after the hour. It's all right. You got Coach Lamb. He'll just shovel it off, man. And I know that was a fun story. You're going to be shoveling snow. UNC head football coach Ed Lamb joining us today. Been on for the full ride here. We're halfway done. We're officially at the halfway mark, Coach.
Oh, that was fast.
This is the fastest show we've ever had. Let me just say that. 30 minutes after the hour, let's take a quick break. It's the whole show powered by Mosquito Joe of Northern Colorado. We'll be right back.
Avalanche games and talk. Keep it on Northern Colorado's voice. 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
There's only one feeling, like lighting that open sign for the first time. Like deciding whether or not to frame that first dollar. Like knowing every customer by name when they walk through the door. Whether you're starting from scratch or from a century of tradition, every business deserves a bank that's been growing communities for generations. Bank of Colorado. There's only one. Member FDIC.
This is Adam Matas with DNVR, the DNVR Bar, and the DNVR Nuggets podcast, and you're listening to The Whole Show with Brady Hull.
Coach, outside of football, UNC head coach Ed Lamb joining us in studio today. What are you into? I mean, I know you're a family man. You're a great family man. I know you you have animals. You're into that stuff. But what about, like, just for entertainment purposes? What does Coach Ed Lamb do to unwind?
Oh, wow. It's interesting that you said it that way. I was listening to you and formulating my answer, but then at the end there, you said to unwind. So it's different things for me. I like to work with my hands. I miss that. My dad was a general contractor. In the summer times, I would work, you know, with him when I wasn't doing sports in school. And I do miss the feeling of working on something and then being able to see a result. You don't really get that in football very often. You play 12 games a year or whatever. And so I like to get out and this time of year, I'm trimming a lot of trees, you know, 6 acres that I'm taking care of there. And so, trimming a lot of trees, working the chainsaw, I'm working on prepping the garden beds for the summer. I'm working on the pastures. Tanner gives me a really hard time about the pastures because I spent a lot of time researching it and trying to bring up these pastures. He says a pasture is just meant to be left alone. But he's feeding cows, and cows are not picky. They'll eat weeds. Horses don't eat weeds. And so I've got to minimize my weeds and maximize my grass.
Well, you've got a different outfit than Tanner. I mean, they don't even have electricity out there, Coach. I mean, it's Amish country out there. So completely different philosophy from where you're coming from.
Yeah, he's just completely disgusted with me. But I'm not a cattle guy. I don't have cattle. I've got the horses and I've got the fowl, the chickens and the ducks.
So you're working all the time. Like, what do you do just to like, hey, I'm putting,
yes.
Does Coach Lamb like say, I'm putting sweatpants on
so
tonight,
yes.
You know, and I'm just staying in and we're going to watch Everybody Loves Raymond or something. What outside of just constantly working and making yourself a better person physically and mentally, what do you do that's kind of like, hey, I'm going to be lazy for a second?
Yeah. If I'm not moving, then it is like just completely couched. Reading, I don't do that as much at home as I used to do. I do that more in the office because a lot of my reading nowadays is more educational for the purposes of my job.
Yeah.
And so I'll do a little bit of reading in the morning just habitually. It's a good way for me to start the day. But for the most part, when it's time to relax, my wife Sarah and I, we're going to be into some type of streaming show or movie that we've heard about, and that's going to be kind of our final thing of the night. And then we've got the challenges you and I have documented about my autistic son, Edward. He's the last one that's in the home with us full time. And so we've got that routine. But when it's time, when he finally slows down and we're slowing down, that's what it is. It's the Netflix.
Are you watching anything right now in particular?
Let's see. We right now we're watching episode 49 of Survivor, or season 49.
Oh yeah,
of Survivor.
That's so still rolling, man.
We've watched all of those. We like those. We like the series Alone, the survival show as well. That one's great. We're pretty much we'll stick and move. A lot of different series, like, but they come and they go. You know, they're good and then they're gone. Yeah,
but I could totally, and of course your answer would be to watch like shows like that where you're watching other people work and go through. It's never, you mentioned Game of Thrones too, but I could picture you totally being on Survivor. I think you could find a way to survive. I think you would figure that out.
Well, they'd go after me. Yeah. So I'd have to be incognito about my job.
Because you'd be a favorite.
That's part of it. And then they start to go after the challenge. I think I would do well in the challenges. And I think that that puts a real target on you. And my social game is not great. So I think I would have to really survive with immunity necklaces.
Do you think if you were on that island, on a Survivor-type island, would you try to form an alliance with old back there, with Michael? Do you think that would be a good idea or a bad idea? It's okay to say no.
That's I think that's where I'd fail. So our family is really big into it, and we've discussed this. My family feels like that I would set up my own camp separate than everybody.
Yeah,
I would show up for challenges, and I would show up for tribal council and be voted off fairly quickly. As soon as I was exposed without an immunity necklace, that I would be,
and then
I would be voted off.
You've got to vote off the strongest of the competition. And Michael, no, you wouldn't survive the first 20 minutes of the episode. Some kind of thing would bite you and you'd be done.
I've not seen one episode. I kind of get the gist of it. So this whole voting thing, I didn't know there was a voting.
Although they
thing.
Might keep Michael on because it's like, hey, he's not going to win the challenges, right? Would you?
Yeah, if you're not a challenge threat and you're a good person, like, I don't see Mike being a guy that's going to, like, argue about what the shelter needs to look like. You know what I mean? I think he's going to he's a kind of a go with the flow guy.
You'll be lying in it while you're making it.
And I'm not going to argue either. I'm like, yeah, you guys sleep in that. I'm going over here to build my own stuff and stay out of my way.
Yeah, I can totally see that. Do you ever see the series Lost? Did you ever see that?
Oh, yeah.
You know, and again, you don't look like the guy, but John Locke? What's his
name?
Is it John Locke?
Yeah.
You're totally John Locke. Yeah. You're like the guy that just knows how to do everything, and people are like, what's his story, man? I don't know, but he just figures everything out. Yeah. You would be that guy on the island.
I can see that.
Yeah. All right, 12:41 the time. Faith says, think Coach Lamb could do the Special Forces show. What is the Special Forces show? Is that, I haven't seen that.
That's where I think they take people and train them kind of to be special forces,
yes,
and then make them do that.
Ed could do that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Like training people. It's what I do.
100%. You could do that. 12:42. Me, Michael, and I, not so much. A lot of couch time. Not together, unless it's a special occasion. But for the most part, yeah. A lot of couch time.
Yeah, my knees don't work.
Yeah. 42 minutes after the hour, let's get the latest on the local sports flash.
Hey, this is Warren Jackson, former CSU wide receiver, and you're listening to the whole show on KFK.
How hard is it for you, Coach? Like, I mean, your career is sports. Your career is football. Do you find yourself like being a fan? Like, can you sit back on Sundays and watch the NFL, or is it like, man, my mind is so plugged in so many different ways? Obviously, when the NFL is rolling, most of the time you're in season. Is it a difficult thing to just sit back and be a fan? So, like, what I'm asking you to do, the topics we're talking about, how tough is that for you to just sit back and relax and watch football? Are you thinking of a million things while you're doing so?
Well, it is completely different than the process that I have when I'm at work. So we have all 22 film.
Yeah.
And we have a sideline shot and a backline shot, what they've got, a tight and a wide shot. So when I'm studying the game of football, there's a completely different product in front of my eyes. And so several times last night, even my wife would say, like, oh, what do you think of this play or that play? Oh, was that pass interference and stuff like that? And I would say, well, I'll watch it next week, because I will get the all 22 film. I will get the professional study film of that game and hundreds of other games that I watch throughout the course of the year. So what I'm saying is, because it's such a different visual product than what I'm looking at when I'm actually working on football,
mm-hmm,
it's not that hard to enjoy the game for just the momentum, the pageantry, the score, the players that are making the plays. But the film is completely inadequate.
Yeah.
When you're watching a broadcast of a game, it's completely inadequate to determine what the coverage is. They almost never show the defensive backs.
Never, yeah.
Until the ball actually comes that direction.
Which is one of the reasons we try to, you know, on this show especially, I try not to get too lost in the weeds of, oh, if a receiver beats somebody deep and just flip out on, well, that corner's terrible. I always like to hear it from, you know, whether it's the coach talking about it, or because nowadays coaches are doing podcasts, you know, they jump on and they go into deep detail and it's like, hey, that wasn't the corner's, that wasn't his responsibility on that. It was supposed to be a safety over the top, or just somebody got lost there, whatever. Because myself included in that, the casual fan, like, we don't see even, you know, 10% of what you guys are looking for on a regular basis.
There's some truth to that, certainly, that I can acknowledge. But so here's the deal with regard to coverages. There are five coverages. Everything else is a wrinkle within those. And there are variations to the point where any coach that, you know, really wanted to kind of extrapolate it all out, could teach you 200 different coverages, but they all have four families. There's basically cover zero, where it's you have no help in your coverage, or your help is the pass rush or some underneath zone help. You have cover one, which is generally man with a free safety in the middle of the field and all the variables off of that type of coverage. You have a two high safety defense or two of any players helping you out, and that's called cover two. And then there's cover three and cover four, where you have three deep or four deep. Everything else is a variation of those. So what I'm trying to say is, even as simplistic as that is, any coach, former coach, somebody that's not, you know, doesn't know the actual play that was called, they could tell you the type of coverage, But to actually diagnose who made a mistake, you're taking, at best, an educated guess because there are so many wrinkles within every coverage. Mm. Every player in, if we just take cover two, for example, every player in the secondary, their technique and their assignment could change within any wrinkle of the overall cover two family. So to sit there and diagnose and say, oh, that was cover two, that's the safety's fault or the corner's fault, there's no coach that could do that with 100% accuracy.
Wow. All right, we can get more into that too. Coming up in the final hour of the show, we got buy or sell coming up, Coach, so I'll ask you some buy or sell questions. You'll be ready for that. It's really intense. And then we'll talk a little Broncos-Patriots too, kind of a first glance at the New England Patriots as the Broncos get set without Bo Nix to see if they can move on to the Super Bowl. It's the whole show powered by Mosquito Joe of Northern Colorado. We'll be right back.
Broncos are in the playoffs, and we have the games and talk you need. Northern Colorado's voice. 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Hey, this is Cato June, all-pro linebacker, Super Bowl champion. You're listening to 1310 KFKA.
All right. All right, bam. We busted through 2 hours of that, Coach. Fantastic job by you.
Quick.
We're almost on to the final hour of the show. Coming up next, we'll get into buy or sell. And, we'll talk a little Broncos-Patriots, too. The future of college athletics, if we can get to that in an hour, who knows? It'll fly by. Time flies when you're having fun, Coach, and I really appreciate you jumping in and doing this with me, man.
Yeah, it's been fun for me.
All right, man. We're live from the Aloe Fiber Studios. You're listening to the whole show powered by Mosquito Joe on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 at 1310 KFKA.
This KFK podcast is presented by Bank of Colorado. Honesty, integrity, hard work. It's the way you live and the way we bank. Bank of Colorado has been a family-owned, community-focused bank for generations and will be here for generations to come. Bank of Colorado. There's only one. Member FDIC.